Hello, I'm Ian Stone. Welcome to the show. This week we'll be talking about Chelsea, obviously, and whether they're currently looking into bargain flights and 3-for-2 deals on footballs. We'll also talk about PSG and their continuing quest to find more ridiculous ways to go out of the Champions League. And we'll see some fairly outsized feet running the line. And you don't hear that every day. But you do on this show, because this is the Football Zone. Yes, thanks for joining us. My guests this week are two fine, some would say dandy, football chaps. It's Ian Moore and Ellis James. Morning, chaps.
Hello,
Ian. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Ian, I'll start with you. What have you noticed this week?
I've noticed there was a couple of things, actually, but I've noticed that so many teams are actually reliant on just one individual. It's a bit like, you remember old-fashioned Christmas fairy lights on the tree? If one goes, they all go. Ronaldo obviously papered over the cracks with United. Kane wasn't functioning, so Spurs don't function. I think Chelsea without Rudiger would just collapse as well. And so all this money that's been spent on squads, and yet, you know, take one individual out of most of the teams and they'll fall down like a pack of cards.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I noticed as well was Jurgen Klopp is far angrier since he had laser eye surgery. I don't know whether that's a side effect, but he loses it more often than he used to.
Well, I have no idea if that's the reason, but I'll take your word for that. Ellis, what have you noticed this week?
I love this. This is a great example of PSG fans holding a grudge. This is Neymar and Messi standing over the ball before a free kick, being booed by their own fans. Neymar's clearly thinking, all right, then I'll show you. And then he takes the free kick and blasts it into Rose Ed.
Yeah. Well, we will talk about
that. That's Parisians for you.
We will talk about that in a short while. The bare facts are that the British government has seized Chelsea FC from Roman Abramovich, and it's been coming. The wall may not always move back the requisite 10 yards at Chelsea, but the writing has been on it for some time. I know. It's a tremendous amount of effort went into that joke for very little reward, I feel. Now, look, there have been a million jokes about what the new belt tightening at Chelsea will actually look like, so let's do as many of them as we can in the time permitted. I like the tweet about the Megabus as their new team coach, although Thomas Tuchel rather superseded that one when he suggested he drive a 7-seater minibus to Lille. Ellis, N'Golo Kanté could sit on somebody's lap, couldn't he? Rudiger's maybe?
Oh, yeah. I think that is all of those footballers, Mason Mount, Werner, everyone in that team will have at one stage got to like an under-12s game in a minibus. So it is keeping it real. I don't see why they can't. They must have seen the Italian job. Why don't they drive down to Lille? Because that was the big story, wasn't it? The idea that they've only got 20,000 quid to get the players to a fixture.
To Middlesbrough.
And that's not enough. Yeah, that's not enough to get Chelsea to Middlesbrough, £20,000. Every now and then.
They're going on the wrong websites. They need to be going on Lickety Split.
Yeah.
Split ticket.
Break up that train journey.
Yeah, they get off at Crewe. And then they wait for half an hour, and then they change onto the two carriage train.
Yeah, but then
bus replacement service as well.
But then they get off in Crewe. They get to go to Costa. They get to buy some Haribo. That's what the supporters are doing. I just don't see what the problem is.
No.
Every now and then you read about these weird things that were nationalised. Like Pickford's was nationalised at one stage. Just nationalised Chelsea. They could be slightly inefficient. They could be the people's club, the real people's club. I don't feel sorry for Abramovich. He'll be fine because he's got a $1 billion yacht that's got its own missile defence system. So I can't feel sorry for him. And it just shows what football has become. Like when a load of extravagantly sideburned men founded the Football League in Manchester in the 1880s, I bet they were thinking, in 130 years' time, if this goes well, this would be great for a bit of sports washing, wouldn't it? We'll be going up to little kids playing three in the street, saying, what do you want to do when you grow up? Oh, I want to be a striker for a club where the owner allegedly has links to the Kremlin. That's what I want to do. Yeah, you carry on, son. It's just such a heartwarming story, isn't it?
I mean, the other question is, where do they stay when they go on overseas trips? I mean, Ian, is there a... a French version of Premier Inn, Inn Premier, Loge Voyage.
Yeah, there's loads. There's, the worst one is Formule 1. It's supposed to be quite glamorous, named after Formula 1, but man, they're drab. And I think the Chelsea team would be at home because they look like 1960s Soviet office buildings. So they'd be absolutely perfect. I'd like the idea of Chelsea being nationalised, and then there should be like a cabinet minister for Chelsea. Rhys Mogg or somebody like that. I think football has a problem here that if we've got to the point where the only way you can maintain yourself as a successful football team is to be owned either by a prototype James Bond villain or an entire oil rich nation, then you've got to argue that football has kind of lost its way a little bit.
Yes.
Certainly its soul.
Yes. I think there's something in that. I mean, I was thinking of bed and breakfast. I think having to be in before 10 in the evening is just the sort of discipline your modern footballer needs. I mean, there's also the question, is there not of catering moving forwards? I mean, will fans be able to buy overpriced snacks and beers and then miss the 5 minutes of the second half? Will they still serve sautéed gazelle in the boardroom? Ellis, will we need to leave bags of food outside Stamford Bridge?
I looked into this. That's set in stone. You can still buy a chicken balti pie that is hotter than Venus at Stamford Bridge. As long as you've got a season ticket and you can get into the ground, you can buy a Kit Kat and a pint of fizzy lager and a chicken balti pie. That's done. Because obviously you've got to have sanctions, but the sanctions have got to be reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, for crying out loud. So yeah, that is in. And the few sort of Brentford fans who already bought away tickets, they're allowed to go.
Yeah.
So if you were an early bird and you bought away tickets for a fixture, it just means that your away following would be quite small. But it's gonna make a great episode of the Premier League years.
You could reduce the ticket prices at Stamford Bridge if you ask opposition supporters to actually bring some food parcels with them. a kind of Premier League food bank set up in West London.
They printed programmes, but they weren't allowed to sell them. But they're on sale now on eBay for 20 quid.
Yeah.
I think the other thing to talk about is whether things really change after all this is unknowable. But as you boys have mentioned, it has brought into sharp focus the question of club ownership. When all said and done, the ownership of football clubs by billionaires or sovereign funds of all rich nations has produced an amazing product and probably the most competitive in Europe. Ian, I'll ask you this. The German model is 50 plus one fan ownership. Bayern Munich win the title every year. It's dull.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. It depends whether you want dull or not human rights abuses. I mean, it's a difficult moral choice for most football fans.
Yeah.
It's a toss-up, you know.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, but Bayern Munich still get to the latter stages of the Champions League every year, and yet Paris Saint-Germain aren't getting to the latter stages of the Champions League every year.
Yeah,
Chelsea didn't win the title last year. So it's no guarantee, just because you know, you've got billions and billions, it's no guarantee.
I mean,
it is a guarantee for Bayern Munich because they're the only team in Germany.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's a slightly different prospect.
Also, there is this huge culture of football tourism to Germany. Groups of British supporters going over to Borussia Dortmund and standing in the red wall, in the yellow wall, I should say, where there's like that terrace behind the goal that holds 28,000.
Yeah.
And tickets are affordable, and season tickets are affordable. And yeah, Bayern Munich doing it every year, but there are elements of the Bundesliga that I'm so jealous of. Because I don't think, of course you have tourists coming over to watch Man City and Man United and Liverpool and Chelsea and Arsenal. But I just think it's different. I think the German, the fan-owned model. I mean, I'm saying this as well because it's not the case anymore, but when Swansea were in the Premier League and we were owned by a consortium of local businessmen and the Fans Trust as well, supporting Moral High Ground FC, it is an absolutely lovely feeling, let me tell you. And it's different now because it's a lot of hedge fund owners from America. Those days are gone. But yeah, I'm jealous of the Germans. I think they've got it sorted over there.
I mean, you also...
There's no reason why you can't have, you know, certain type of billionaire owner and not have more fan representation on the board.
Well, we'll talk. Yeah. I mean, we will talk about that. I mean, you guys mentioned the fact, the idea of the government taking over Chelsea. I mean, Rhys Mogg could do a job maybe with defensive, you know, coach or something. Priti Patel.
Putting Ellis, cones out.
Priti Patel in charge of player recruitment. I mean, does that work for you? Yeah. She knows her way around the visa system, I imagine.
Yeah. I think there'd be a limit on overseas players. Yeah.
Well, I like the idea of Jacob Rees-Mogg putting cones up for training, but it's a load of top hats.
I mean, I think, listen, we're having a laugh about this, but the truth is the fit and proper test doesn't appear to be fit and proper. We need a fit and proper, fit and proper test. I mean, essentially, the current one suggests to me that aside from Kim Jong-un, pretty much anyone else qualifies. And they're now talking about...
That's a shame. I was rather banking on him for Blackburn, to be perfectly honest.
Well, they're now talking about a human rights element in the fit and proper test. Oh, hang on a minute. What's that? That's a ship sailing over the horizon.
Yeah.
I mean, it was quite funny, I think, Ellis, for the Newcastle fans to sing Mike Ashley, he's coming for you. Because they've got absolutely nothing to be ashamed of in that regard.
Yeah, and... I was doing a gig in Newcastle when they were taken over, and the amount of Newcastle fans who were out in town dressed in quite culturally inappropriate headgear, pretending to be Saudi Arabian, you think, I don't know, as a supporter in this, you're completely helpless.
Yes.
And you are there before they arrive, and you are there after they've gone. But you don't have to celebrate it in that way. I think it's just tasteless, because I've realised over the last couple of years that football clubs, it's not really to do with the success, it's to do with the people you go with and the people you've gone with for years and years. And you will outlive managers, you will outlive players, yes. They come and go, of course. But your friendship and going to the ground, that is the thing that remains. But you don't have to be so... You just don't have to be so proud of it and revel in it. I just think it's very, very poor taste.
It's an easier reaction than admitting that there's a problem, though, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not necessarily wallowing in it. It's just saying, well, let's try and take it more lightheartedly. I think it's a natural human reaction. I mean, the Newcastle fans wore they wore the stuff on their heads. When the Venkies took over Blackburn, there were lots of Blackburn fans wearing rubber chickens on their head. I mean, it's that's equally inappropriate in many ways.
Maybe slightly less human rights abuses with chicken farming, perhaps.
Hey, tell that to a vegan.
I mean, one of the prospective buyers for Chelsea, and they're trying to get this done in the next few weeks, is the property developer Nick Candy, who said he'd have a fan on the board. I mean, if that happens at Arsenal, I sincerely hope it's not the bloke three rows back from me whose only real opinion on the team is for them to make them pay. Ellis, I'm not sure how useful that would be in the boardroom.
It's just a lot of pressure on that one fan, isn't it? I mean, you've got, in Arsenal's case, you know, millions of fans worldwide. I mean, to represent all of them.
Yeah.
That is too much for one person to bear, I think.
Should it be like jury duty? Everyone gets
national service.
You know.
Oh yeah, my 15 minutes is at 3 a.m. They're all asleep. It's fine. I can't do anything.
Leave a note for them in the morning. That's it for this bit. We'll be back with PSG and Manchester United in a short while. Part two of the Football Zone with me, Ian Stone, Ellis James and Ian Moore. Now, in contrast to Chelsea and their present financial uncertainties, over in France, PSG have pretty much unlimited resources, which was why it was tremendously entertaining to watch them lose their collective minds at the Bernabeu last week. However much money they chuck at it, they still can't get their hands on a Champions League. Ian, shouldn't we all rejoice in the fact that money isn't everything?
I've spent my life rejoicing that money isn't everything, but mainly forced down that route. It's the Parisian thing is it's an odd one, because Paris people, they're not really French. This is the thing you should understand about France, is that the Parisians don't see themselves as French mainly. They see themselves as Parisians.
Is it like
first
London
and foremost.
In that sense?
Well, I think it's more. I think it's more. I think the divide is bigger over here. And also, you have to understand that PSG is a relatively young club. It doesn't have a great history. So people are buying into it now, expecting the success, and their patience wears thin really, really, even more quickly than it usually does for a Parisian. If you've ever walked down the street, you'll know just how quickly these people react. And it just seems like such a joyless club to play for. Nobody seems to enjoy playing there.
No.
There's a real problem with that.
No.
And they didn't even win the league last year. Which is astonishing for the resources that they have.
I mean, Ellis, I know I can sometimes get accused of Arsenal bias, but I am an Arsenal fan, and it's going to happen from time to time. But this question, honestly, has nothing to do with what I'm about to say. But are PSG a bit Spursy? I mean, essentially a very expensive version of Tottenham.
I don't think they're like Spurs. I think they're like the Harlem Globetrotters. They're a sort of an exhibition team because Messi, you know, he's past his best. Neymar's past his best. They brought him over from Barca. Barca haven't won the Champions League themselves since 2015, I think. And they just mess it up in amazing ways. And but you know, you live in London as well, Ian. I see people in PSG shirts and tracksuits all the time.
Yeah.
I think, why have you chosen them of all the teams to sort of glory hunt? Why are you choosing a team in Ligue 1, which isn't even a particularly strong league? Like, no French club's ever won the UEFA Cup, the Europa League. Then Marseille won the Champions League almost 30 years ago. And then obviously PSG got to the final in 2020. It's such a joyless team if you're not from Paris to think, that's going to be my side. Yeah. It's just a weird, weird choice. But I see people in PSG kits all the time these days, which obviously you never did 5 years ago.
No.
There's loads around here, obviously. I live in the Loire Valley, and PSG is probably it is, in terms of distance, the closest Ligue 1 club to around here. So you get a lot of kids wearing the PSG stuff, but it's a smart badge as well. You have to remember that, wrongly, leisure wear is what most people choose to wear most of the time these days. And PSG, the stuff looks good. They probably don't even support the club. They probably have no idea what's going on. It's just how people dress. You know, the world's going to hell in a handcart.
The only time I saw a PSG shirt look cool was at Glastonbury 3 years ago when a young kid was wearing a Thiago Silva shirt, and Dave the rapper got him up and he did a song with Dave. Alex, his name was. And it was absolutely fantastic.
Do you know what they remind me of, though? They remind me of the kid in school whose parents bought him all of the trainers that he wanted and all of the toys that he wanted. Yeah. And to give you rather a strained analogy, last night I picked up my daughter from Brownies and she was quite upset. And I said, "Why are you upset?" And she said, "I wanted to be one of the foxes, but I'm a rabbit." And I called Brown Owl and I said, she's crying here. You've got to make her a fox and you've made her a rabbit. And Brownell said, I'll make her a fox. I'll talk to her next week. And as I put the phone down, I thought, I've sorted that. I thought, oh God, it's quite Paris Saint-Germain what I've just done, isn't it? I've effectively chucked money at the problem here. I've just said, listen, this is how it's going to be. And you are going to sort that out whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I'm bringing up a little PSG fan by going in two-footed on Brown Owl.
You mentioned, Ellis, I mean, the PSG fans booed Messi and Neymar at the weekend, entitled Moi. Ian, I'm interested. What does the rest of French football think about PSG and their fans?
But again, you see, it's the division between the rest of France and Paris. They think they think they're laughable, absolutely laughable. But there are still a lot of fans outside of Paris, but just wearing the stuff. The real dedicated fans you get in France tend to be Lyon or certainly Olympique Marseille. It's like Ella says, it's more of a Harlem Globetrotters style thing. Maybe that would work. Instead, play that as they run onto the pitch. Play the Harlem Globetrotters theme and see if they react to it that way. Like when they scored at the weekend, nobody smiled, nobody congratulated each other, nothing. Yeah. There was absolutely nothing there.
No.
It's like a ghost ship. It's awful.
Yeah. As for Maurizio Pochettino, he's just the latest manager to struggle to get a tune out of this mind-blowingly expensive team. But what has it done for his future prospects? His past and possibly next managerial appointments, Spurs and Manchester United, met at Old Trafford at the weekend and played out a thrilling 3-2 win for United. Ellis, surely United are not that fickle to judge him on yet another PSG implosion?
Well, that is what I'm reading in the papers. That apparently thinking, no, not too sure about you anymore.
Yeah.
And the thing with Pochettino, I'd look at his record. He hasn't actually won that much. He got to a Champions League final. He got to a League Cup final with Tottenham as well. He's won the French Cup and the French equivalent of the Charity Shield, or the Community Shield, yeah. I should say. Show my age there. But it's not like he's ripping it up and winning league titles and, you know, winning trophies wherever he goes. The one they might be interested in at PSG, Ian, I hate to upset you, is Arteta. He might be going over to Paris. Have you heard that?
Why? What? I haven't. Where did you read that? Why did you read that out on this
Look
show?
How flustered he is.
Why are you doing that to me?
You're the most flustered.
Quick, cut to an ad break. Calm him down.
I've been doing stand-up with you for 15 years, Ian. And I've never seen you look that flustered. Is it? You did
No need. He comes into your own home. I'm in my own home, Ian, and he does that to me. Let's keep talking about Manchester United, if that's okay. Thank you. Anyway, what about when Maguire scored the own goal and Romero got right in his face? On the radio, Ellis, they were talking about how that would have kicked off in the tunnel. Now, I know plenty of players who wouldn't have waited till the tunnel.
Yeah, and I bet you it didn't, because it just sort of never does anymore. I mean, when I think of tunnel spats, I think of pizzas being chucked, but that's almost 20 years ago, yeah. That stuff. And I think it's a shame. I don't mind a bit of tunnel stuff. I think it shows that the players care.
I agree.
Oh, that old chestnut.
Yeah. I mean, To illustrate how little I know about football, for the script for last week's show, I had a line that read, and I quote, "Is this the beginning of the end for Ronaldo? Of course it is." And so It came to pass that not 3 days after that statement, Ronaldo scored a hat-trick. Ian, I know it's never been said before, but you can't write off Ronaldo.
I just do think he is, like I said earlier, I think he is papering over cracks. But he's also perfect for Pochettino to come in because he's used to dealing with ageing stars who are, frankly, past their best. Ronaldo can't do it every week like that.
No.
And I don't see why Pochettino wouldn't be chosen by Man United. Man United are not at the top of the tree. And, you know, there has to be, surely, a finite number of German managers available to come into big clubs in the UK. So they're going to have to spread their net wider. I think Pochettino is perfect for United.
I like the idea.
Because he hasn't, I'm not saying he's overrated, but he hasn't actually achieved that much. So, you know, they fit together very well.
I like the idea of German managers queuing at customs or something. It's a bit like the scene in Life of Brian, where Michael Palin's going, crucifixion, first cross, line on the left. They just go, Manchester United, yes, you'll have to wait for a while.
Yeah, Brentford.
There was also the fun of listening to Roy Keane getting himself into a lather over Harry Maguire wearing gloves in the warm-up. Ellis, do you think Roy thinks players should be dressed like the Spartans in the 300?
It's just... I think so, but then he'd have some issue with that, you know. I was about to do a very, very culturally insensitive Irish accent, so I'm just going to pull myself back. you were this close to seeing me being cancelled then.
What, you think the Arteta comment is not going to do that for you?
He was upset, wasn't he, that... Was it Maguire was wearing gloves? That was something that bothered him.
In the warm-up?
It's a very 1989 gripe to have with footballers, isn't it? Because in 1990, I would say, in the English Football League, maybe one player in every 100 wore gloves. And you were effectively saying to your opponent, hi, I'm a soft touch. But nowadays, no one cares. None of the other players would have noticed. No. It's gloves. It's March. It just doesn't matter.
And it's Manchester, for crying out loud. You need gloves in August in Manchester.
Yeah.
Like Ellis says, it's a warm up. Why wouldn't you wear gloves in a warm up? You're warming up. That's the point of gloves.
And I'm slightly tired of
Roy Keane's Danny Dyer like character that he seems to have just settled himself into. Yeah. It has to moan about something. Has to moan about it.
Also,
and that's coming from you. I've got to be honest.
But I know.
But it shows how
even Ian Moore
how football's
going,
moved on.
Too much moaning.
I hadn't noticed that he was wearing gloves in the warm up. I would never notice that a footballer was wearing gloves in the warm up. I probably would have noticed 20 years ago.
No.
But it shows how society makes these gradual, incremental, little improvements and displays of progression. Like years and years ago, goalkeepers didn't wear gloves during the game, and the first goalies to wear gloves in like the late 70s. Fans were like, "Oh, who do you think you are, little Lord Fauntleroy, for wearing gloves? Because Peter Osgood's kicking a medicine ball at you at 70 miles an hour. Who do you think you are, the Duchess of Kent?"
It's so ridiculous. I was just thinking of Roy Keane on Captain Scott's expedition to the Antarctic. And Oates goes, "I'm just going outside." He's going, "You're wearing a coat? What's wrong with you?"
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Now, just
Roy Keane would have done that in flip-flops, I can tell you.
All right, let's have a little quiz. Who am I? Basically, I read out some clues and the chaps try to guess who I'm talking about. Here we are. Born March 1972, I played for 11 teams in 4 countries. That's Holland, Portugal, Spain and 5 clubs over here. As a player, I only won a charity shield in England. However, I was the Premier League Golden Boot winner in 98, 99 and 2000, 2001. And I played for my country 23 times, scoring 9 goals. And I eventually moved into management, where I've managed 3 English clubs as well as 1 in the Netherlands. Who am I? We'll let you know after the break. Part 3 of The Football's On, Ian Moore, Ellis James and me, Ian Stone. Before the break, I asked, who am I? And I gave these clues. Born March 1972, I played for 11 teams in 4 countries, the Netherlands, Portugal, Spain and 5 clubs over here. As a player, I only won a charity shield in England. However, I was the Premier League Golden Boot winner in 98, 99 and 2000, 2001. And I did play for my country 23 times, scoring 9 goals. And I eventually moved into management, where I have managed 3 English clubs as well as 1 in the Netherlands. Who am I? Ian, I'm going to come to you first.
The name that sticks out is Mark Hughes, but it's not Mark Hughes because obviously he won far more.
Yes, and also because you asked me in the interval and I said it wasn't Mark Hughes.
Yeah, I know. And then you told me to say that answer anyway to make me look a fool.
I did.
So I'll be welcoming Mikel Arteta to France with open arms.
Oh, what a ganging up on me. Not Mark Hughes. Ellis, what have you got?
Is it Hasselbank?
It is. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. Very good.
Well done.
Nice.
Well done.
Nice. And interesting, he won the Golden Boot in the year that Manchester United won the treble as well. And Thierry Henry was playing for Arsenal at that point. No, actually, no, he wasn't. Nicolas Anelka was, but still... Anyway, let's move on. The BT Sport game on Saturday was Brighton against Liverpool. This is Luis Diaz bravely scoring the first Liverpool goal and getting kicked in the chest for his troubles.
It's just wrong.
Now, well, Ian, I don't want to see sendings off, not least because I think it ruins the game, but he didn't even get a booking. And as Rio Ferdinand said on this channel, it would have been a decent move in WWE.
Yeah. There's that old saw about if it had happened anywhere else on the pitch, what would have happened? And he would have got a red card anywhere else on the pitch. Frankly, if you did that in a pub beer garden, you'd be arrested and charged. It's verging on assault. It's, you know, he knew what he was doing.
Wow.
It was very brave from Diaz.
It was.
He did, because he didn't even get near the ball.
No.
I mean, he was going into Diaz from the start, not at the ball.
On the commentary, Ellis, they were talking about Harald Schumacher for Germany against France in the Euros. We're talking about the difference between careless and reckless, aren't we? Because Schumacher basically aimed his foot at was it Batiston's head?
He gets him with his elbow.
Yeah.
The Schumacher one.
Yeah.
It's horrible, the Schumacher one, when you see it back. Schumacher, they had in a French newspaper, they did a poll on who was the most hated man in France. And Schumacher rated above Adolf Hitler, which goes to show, which goes to show how easy.
Yeah, I'm assuming this wasn't done directly after the Second World War, I'd imagine.
No. Well, Schumacher was a little boy.
Before I moved out here as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Ian, you said it. Football rules can be a bit strange. That whole idea that fouls in the penalty area have to be worse. You know, if it was anywhere else on the pitch, that'd be a foul. And that doesn't work in any other area of the law. Yes, here it's burglary, but over there it's just compensatory shopping.
it's goalkeepers as well. They're not only protected massively, but they get away with stuff like
they
that.
They do.
You know, I'm surprised Diaz didn't get a booking for headbutting Sanchez's knee or whatever.
Yeah, I'm told that on goalkeeping courses, goalkeepers are encouraged to jump with their knee up to discourage forwards from challenging for the ball.
Really?
Yeah.
That is. I mean, I was never a goalkeeper. That's news to me. The dark arts.
Yeah.
I mean, when Ferdinand said it was like something out of WWE, what it reminded me of was those weird traditional medieval games of football that are played in small towns in the Midlands on Shrove Tuesday, where some meathead will get beaten up by 200 blokes outside Superdrug, and it lasts about 4 hours.
Yeah. While we're talking Liverpool, I guess we should talk about the possibility of the quadruple, Ian, just so we can jinx it as soon as possible, yeah?
Do you really think that's on? I don't see it being on. I'd like City not to win the title. I have a slight problem with City. And I'd like to see Klopp win some cups, and I'd like to see them Yeah, go on, let's have it. Let's have the quadruple. I'll go for that.
Oh, my God. That's not the way I wanted this question to go, but okay.
I know. But, you know, you'll be looking for a manager next season. You've got other things to worry about.
Yes, this is tremendously funny stuff from both of you guys. Now, I'd imagine that most of you watching this show are football fans, but just in case you're not, and if you're not, well done for staying with us this far. If you're not and you're thinking, offside, what's that? Well, here's Liza Minnelli to clear it up once and for all.
You're not singing anymore. You're not singing anymore. Hi, I'm Liza Minnelli, and I'm definitely still singing. Singing is easy. Anyone can do it. But you know what's not so easy? Explaining the offside rule. Let me explain through the medium of song. You're in an offside position if there is only one member of the defending team. He could be the goalkeeper, but he doesn't have to be. And between you, the attacking player who receives the ball and the goalie, at the moment the ball is passed to you. You know, using the latest technology, the guys who decide if the ball is offside, they literally draw lines on still photographs. What? So now when I'm down the county ground watching my beloved Swindon and I'm yelling, "Ref, that was never offside," it usually was.
That was Liza Minnelli there, Suze Kempner, who's actually got a full changing room in her house. I don't think that could be...
Those are all Liza's husbands.
I think that's probably true. I don't think that could be any more concise. Ian, the offside rule, right? If the VAR has to use a protractor to work it out, has it become too complicated?
Yes. Just it has, and this notion, and we've probably discussed it before. The idea that you only put the flag up at the end of the play, it's just become a nonsense. And I read, so I think somebody said on Twitter the other day that one of the problems with VAR specifically is that it's not former professionals in that porter cabin wherever they are watching the playback. But can you imagine a former professional going, yeah, I've been earning 80 grand a week for the last 10 years. I'm now going to sit in a porter cabin in Shropshire looking at the rules of the game.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen. And if it's become that complicated that the level of technology the human race currently has can't work it out properly, then you have to simplify the rule.
Well, this is what Ellis, should we abolish it?
Well, I've accepted now that if they don't get rid of VAR, which they won't, football is now a long, protracted discussion of trying to work out if Patrick Bamford's armpit being offside was some sort of functional advantage in him scoring a goal, which isn't the reason I got into football in the first place.
No.
My solution is that they keep the rule as it is, apart from in the last 10 minutes when it's just a free-for-all. Can you imagine that? If they abolished offside at 80 minutes, and then you've got 10 minutes to do what you want, there'd be goal hanging, you'd have last-minute goals. I just think that the rule is absurd enough as it is. Let's make it more absurd and bring football back to its entertainment roots.
It's really not a bad idea, to be honest with you.
I mean,
on this show, years ago, we talked about the multi-ball possibility, didn't we?
Yes.
I think multi-ball with no offside. Now, that would be exciting.
10 minutes.
But then you are back to those villages on Shrove Tuesday again.
We are.
That's what it becomes, isn't it?
It's, we are.
I don't know. I, the whole point of VAR, the way it was sold, was that it would take out this kind of argument. And it simply hasn't. It's just moved the argument slightly to one side. It's just a slightly different argument. So if it hasn't done its job, don't have it.
No.
And don't have VAR for offside.
No.
You can have it for the things that are definitely blunders, massive blunders, you know, fouls that should have been given, whatever, but
goal line
don't
technology.
Have VAR for offside.
Yeah.
It's also, when they introduced VAR, before I saw it in action, I thought, well, this is just going to solve these things once and for all. But actually, it prolongs the debate, and it makes the debate more boring, and it also ruins the spectacle of football. And yeah, I think Ian's right. I hadn't considered that. You continue to use VAR for stuff like goal line technology and sort of really serious foul play. But offsides, it's down to the assistant referee and the referee. And then, let human error, because the sport is about human error.
Yeah.
I mean, human error, they're all incredible footballers. I know we all take the mickey out of some players in the Premier League. You don't get to the Premier League without being an amazing footballer. So football is a game of mistakes, small scores. You can't build up huge runs and huge innings of runs like you can in cricket, for instance, or accumulate points like you can in rugby. Scores tend to be small. Human error is a big part of it. I think we should celebrate that.
Yeah, it's nice to see.
And also, you've taken out what the live spectacle of the thing of having a go at a linesman. You can't have a go at a linesman now because somebody's sitting 200 miles away.
Can you tell the person in the box 200 miles away that they don't know what they're doing? If you could pass that message on.
Have they got a father?
Yeah. Yes. All right, let's have a little quiz for Ellis James. This is Call Yourself a Fan. And three questions on Swansea, Ellis, and two on general knowledge. I can see how much you're looking forward to this, so let's go for it. Okay, according to Wikipedia, how many players do Swansea Town have out on loan at the time of recording? That's a ridiculous question.
Eight.
Oh, it's nine. We sent one out just before the show started recording, just to mess you up. All right, question two. Which manager holds the record for most games in the Swansea hot seat?
That's going to be, oh God, it's going to be someone from the 40s or the 50s, I think. I can't remember. Who is it? I want to say Frank Burrows. It's not Frank. Who is it?
Trevor Morris.
Oh,
327
that's a long time ago.
Charles of the Swans. All right. Question three. Swansea played their first competitive match on the 7th of September 1912 in the Southern League Division 2. But who did they play it against?
Was it Cardiff?
It was. 1-1 draw. 1 point. Nice, nice. Okay, couple of general knowledge questions for you, Ellis. Jesse Marsh is the new manager at Leeds United. He's become the third US manager in the Premier League. Bob Bradley was the first. Who was the other? Oh.
American managers in the league. Oh, Bob Bradley used to call away games road games. And he used to call penalty kicks PKs.
I don't know if you're going to get this. This is a tough
question. I can't remember. Who is it?
David Wagner, despite being born in Germany, represented the USA 8 times as a player. So according to FIFA, he's American. Harsh. That's a tough question. That is.
That's a tough question.
All right, one more. Real Madrid won the first 5 European Cups, but who was the first team that wasn't Real Madrid to win the trophy?
Was it Inter Milan?
No, it wasn't. It was Benfica. Decent guess.
Unlucky.
A point. Ellis scored a point. Honestly, Ian, that's a decent score. These questions are getting tough. After the break, it's Ian Moore's turn. We'll see in a short while. Part 4 of The Football's On. Just before the break, Ellis James scored 1 out of 5. He was a bit unlucky on a couple of the questions. Ian, it's Thank your you. Turn. 3 questions on Blackburn Rovers and 2 on general knowledge. Question 1. Blackburn have had a Player of the Season award since 1981, but only one player has won it more than once. Who was that player?
Simon Garner.
No, Alan Shearer.
It should have been Simon Garner.
That doesn't change the fact.
I demand a recount.
That it was. Yes. Okay. And hang on, I'm getting something from my producer. I can't say that on TV. Okay. Question 2. We know that Blackburn have won the FA Cup 6 times, the last being in 1928. However, how many times have they won the FA Youth Cup?
See, The thing about Blackburn is that growing up there, nobody ever looks youthful.
No.
So it's difficult to tell if they've ever won. Four times.
Unlucky. It's once. 1959, they won the FA Youth Cup. I mean...
They're still in the youth team, those people.
Even someone who played in that game probably wouldn't know the answer to that.
No.
Question 3. Blackburn Rovers are one of the oldest clubs in English football, but in all those years, how many times have Blackburn suffered relegation? You think badly of your teams. Only eight times. Most recently,
really?
In 2017. Okay, let's have a bit of general
That's
knowledge.
What I meant. Okay.
What year did English football adopt the 3 points for a win system? Wow.
Okay, so this is pre-Premier League. I'm going to say 86.
That's unlucky. It was 1981, actually. I think it's been exciting. Still, no points for Ian Moore here. Okay, last question. How many different countries have had one of their teams win the European Cup?
Okay, so England. I may be a while.
Should we go and have a cup of tea?
If you want to cut to Mikel Arteta. England, Scotland, Sweden, Germany, Holland, France, Spain. Italy. I'm going to say 10.
It is 10. Outstanding. I tell you what's interesting. You mentioned Sweden. They're not one of the 10.
Yeah, but I got up to 11 and cut them out at the last minute.
It's Spain, England, Italy, Germany, Netherlands, Portugal, France, Romania, Scotland, and Yugoslavia. I mean, it was Red Star Belgrade.
I didn't have half of those.
Red Star Belgrade, Yugoslav at the time. It possibly should be Serbia.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And Romania. Romania would be Steaua
Bucharest. Steaua Bucharest won it in 1986. They beat Barcelona on penalties after a very, very boring game. Oh, my God.
Sorry, what was that, Ellis?
Steaua Bucharest beat Barcelona on penalties in 1986 after a very, very boring game that ended 0-0 after 120 minutes. I need help.
Robert, well, it was the tall blonde guy who played for Steaua Bucharest. Robert,
I know.
Prosinecki.
I can't remember now.
Prosinecki, yeah. Prosinecki,
yeah. Right, okay. And the score was 1-1. I think a very honourable draw there. It's holding up in Serie A in Italy, where Milan could win the title for the first time in 11 years. Ellis, I just love Italian football. I don't watch it all that much, but there's something about it.
I love Italian football. Documentaries about Italian football make me think I should be watching it every week. One thing, though, that I would love an Italian football fan to explain to me, maybe you could do a PhD in this, there must be intelligent people watching this programme. In the UK, when we cheer a goal, we go, yeah! In Italy, they go, oh! Which is a very, very unnatural reaction, I think. Next time you're at Arsenal, Ian, if Arsenal score, go, oh! Because it offers a completely different sort of flavour to post-goal celebrations.
Have you tried it, but Ellis?
Do you know what? I tried it at a Wales game once and I just ended up feeling stupid. You look like you're choking. You look like sort of you're choking on a fishbone or something, as opposed to in sort of ecstasy because someone scored a goal.
What you're asking me to do is look stupid at Arsenal next time we score.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Is there a historical context to that, though, with the arms more by the side rather than up there? Because it's a gladiatorial thing, isn't it? So they might have a big sword in one hand and one of those metal nets in another, and just over evolution, they can't get their arms higher. There's something wrong with Italian shoulders, maybe.
You can't come in with that trident, mate.
You wouldn't. No, the ping would go off on the gate, you would have hoped, but...
You know what? The blokes who search you at Arsenal would still miss the trident. I'll be totally honest.
Yeah.
What's that in your pocket? That's just change. Never mind this three-pointed thing I've got in the hand. Ian, with Italian football, if nothing else, you must appreciate the tailoring, right? Armani makes their national team kit.
This is the thing. I mean, I find Italian football a bit dull. But it's good to watch. I mean, I'm very comfortable in my sexuality, but I'd have a calendar of Italian footballers and Italian football fans, frankly. I think it's a wonderful spectacle.
Yeah. I
don't like it as much since they've been more welcoming to British footballing exports, because when Luther Brissett went over to AC Milan in the mid-80s, he complained. He said, no matter how much money you earn, you just can't buy Rice Krispies, which is the best reason for people.
Ian Rush said as well that he didn't last long, did he? He went over to Italy and he said, it's like living in a foreign country. Yeah. So he came back very quickly.
You know, I mean, I remember when Juventus came to Highbury in 1980 I think it was the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final, and we beat them. We drew at Highbury and then beat them in the return. But they just look so exotic, these 11 dark-haired Italian guys against our sort of pasty Irish lads. And it was ever so exciting. What about, Ian, what about the way that Chiellini sings the national anthem?
I love Chiellini. He's probably my favourite footballer around. I think he's got everything. But what he's also got is that... he's got a wonderful sense of fun, which you don't really associate with, you know, these massive, great and brutal defenders. Absolutely adore Chiellini.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. All right, let's have a bit of this week in history. The first one. The World Cup was stolen in 1966, just before the tournament. On the 20th of March, 1966, it was on display and it was nicked. But it was found a week later by a dog. Anyone remember the dog's name?
Pickles.
Pickles.
Pickles. I love that. Ellis, you do have a problem. There's
excuse
no
me. What the hell's going on there?
Oh.
Sorry.
We've got some rock accompaniment to this question.
I have no idea why that started.
It's all right. I think we got...
Listen... We had a sandstorm. We had a red sandstorm from the Sahara last night in this part of France, and communications are down.
All right. Well, okay. Yes, Pickles the dog. That's right. It was found in a park a week later. The FA were planning to make a replica, but they found the World Cup, and on we went. And the rest is history. Let's try this one.
I think the FA brought him a steak as a reward.
and then threw it away.
Is that right? I've never heard that story.
Pardon?
I've never heard that story before.
I am positive. Do you know, the book that I think I read it in, is I can see it, so I can fact check it, if you like. But I'm sure that they bought him a steak as a reward because it was found under a bush at some park.
Yeah.
I don't know why Pickles got all the credit as opposed to the owner.
Well, the owner probably wasn't snuffling about in a bush.
Fair enough. How did he find it? Did they give him an old Brazilian footballer's sock and told him to go and search the park?
He was a special World Cup sniffing dog. I mean, he really thought he was never going to be used, but it turns out it was an excellent move. All right, 10 years later, to the day, we go from Pickles to Nichols. We don't just throw the show together. Chris Nichol scored all four goals in a 2-2 draw for Aston Villa against Leicester, or possibly for Leicester against Aston Villa, depending on your point of view. Ian, scoring two in a game is great, and then getting two own goals, and it just sort of ruins it a bit, doesn't it?
It's greedy, isn't it, really? It's looking for those headlines 50 years later. That's what I think there. But there was it Alan Hutchison or Colin Hutchison who scored at both ends in the cup final for Coventry, didn't he? That's right. Is that right?
It was Hutchison.
I can't remember if it was Alan or Colin, but it's certainly Hutchison, yeah.
Mr. Hutchison, Alan or Colin, we really probably should know that. But anyway, we do remember your goals at both end in the cup final. That's right, Coventry against Spurs, 3-2 in 1987. Ellis, we can't really have a go at someone for wanting attention, can we?
No. He scored two proper goals and then two own goals as well.
Well, they're all proper goals, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, as in non-own goals and then two own goals. So he'll have gone back home and his wife would have said, "How was the game?" And he'd have gone, "I've got no idea."
How was your day in the office? Mixed, dear. Really.
Yeah, mixed.
Some good, some bad.
Yeah.
And Vinnie Jones on this day got booked 3 seconds after kickoff. This is what Vinnie said. "I must have been too high, too strong, too early or too wild, because after 3 seconds, I couldn't have been too bloody late." I mean, Ellis, it's a bit Guy Ritchie, isn't it?
It is. I was there when he made his debut for Wales, because obviously he played for Wales a few times under Bobby Gould. And I think his debut was against Bulgaria at the old Cardiff Arms Park. And he stamped on someone within the first sort of 40 seconds. And everyone in the ground went, "Oh yeah, okay, that's what he's going to do, right? Okay, that's how he sees his role in all of this. Okay, very nice." He was probably a better footballer than he's remembered as being, if you know what I mean. I think that everyone thinks of the awful challenges and stuff, but I actually think he could play a little bit.
But he's propagated that feeling, though, hasn't he? By being the perennial hard man, and I think I don't know if it was that night, but he was certainly playing for Wales at this time. I was staying in a hotel in Newport, and I was in the bar late one night when the entire Wales team walked in, and there was a brooding menace around him. You know, he played up to it all the time. So it's almost like fulfilling his obligation, if you like, just getting sent off after 3 seconds.
Yeah, well, he knows he's made over 50 Hollywood movies. Did you know that?
Wow.
It's amazing.
All of them with exactly the same script.
Yeah, one a week.
Essentially, yes. That's it. Thanks to Ian Moore, Ellis James and Suze Kempner. We're back for another series starting on the 20th of April. We'll see you then.